Coming up on The Week in Geek, Amazon, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Berkshire Hathaway have finally announced a leader for their new healthcare venture. Yes, those three companies have a healthcare venture. He has a tough job ahead of him, but he's coming to it with a unique perspective. Plus, a lawsuit filed by moving app Dolly against the Washington state government could have big ramifications for the gig economy. We'll explain why, and we'll dive into the tech industry's response to the Trump administration's controversial family separation policy. All that and more coming up on The Week in Geek. From GeekWire.com in Seattle, I'm editor Todd Bishop.
And I am health and life sciences reporter and podcast producer Claire McGrain.
It's great to have you here, Claire. So you covered and have been covering the subject of our first story this week, which is fascinating to me because it's three of the most interesting companies in their respective sectors: Amazon, J.P. Morgan Chase, obviously the giant bank, and then Berkshire Hathaway, the big conglomerate of companies run by Warren Buffett, the famed investor. They announced a while back that they were going to be doing something very different, ambitious, and interesting together. Before we jump into the news from this past week about their new CEO for this venture, what the heck are they doing?
That's a question I think a lot of people are asking right now. They haven't provided many details. Basically, they're starting a healthcare venture of some sort. They clarified with this most recent announcement, it is going to be a company, but it's going to be a company that doesn't have to worry about making a profit, at least for right now. And basically, the goal is to change the healthcare system in the U.S., first for the employees of those companies, and later, probably, ideally, for everybody in the U.S. How they're going to do that? Not totally sure. It'll probably involve technology, given that that is obviously Amazon's strength and something that is impacting the health system on a huge scale right now. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, but that is kind of the rough outline.
So it's a health venture formed by these three companies initially to focus on their own employees. But this has gotten a lot of attention in the broader healthcare world. And the news this past week was that they picked their new CEO. And what's interesting about this is I think you can look at his background, his approach, and even some of his past comments about how he would try to transform the health industry as an indication of what these three companies might be wanting to do. So who did they pick?
So they picked a very well-known surgeon and kind of thought leader and writer, Atul Gawande, Dr. Atul Gawande. He practices surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Happens to be where I was born, by the
way.
Oh,
you're kidding.
My mom reminded me last night. Yeah. He's also a professor in the Harvard T.H. Chan Public School of Health at Harvard and a professor in Harvard Medical School. Those are only his official jobs. He also has several other things he does on the side. He's written a few New York Times best-selling novels, obviously a very well-respected and busy guy. And something that he has talked about at quite a lot of length is making reforms to the healthcare system on a huge scale. So not just let's try and change how government insurance works and not just let's try and change how clinics operate, but really systematically trying to change how all these pieces work together, which I think is what appealed to the three CEOs of the companies that were in charge of hiring him.
That's right. And it was a fascinating process that they used to pick the CEO of this new venture. It was Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase and Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway, basically acting as the screening committee with Jeff Bezos of Amazon being the final decider. They had them write a white paper on how they would heal the healthcare industry, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of first that whole approach? Because that just sounds gigantic to me.
Yeah, and this is something we can get into a little later with some of Atul's specific ideas. But I think that the idea of trying to write a white paper on how to fix the healthcare system is something a lot of people in the system would think is just so full of hubris that it's a little silly. Because here's a good thought exercise. If this new health venture, which doesn't have a name yet, so we're just going to have to keep calling it by all of its various parts. If this new company wanted to create a piece of technology and then have every person in the U.S. use it as part of their healthcare, they would need to get it cleared by the FDA. Then they would need to convince three different government insurance bodies to cover it, to pay for it. Then they would need to convince hundreds of individual private insurance companies to pay for it. And then they would need to convince the hundreds of individual health systems across the U.S. to integrate it into their system. And finally, they would need to convince thousands of doctors to convince all of their patients to use it. There is just so many layers to this system.
So doesn't that then lead to the conclusion that the only way to fix it is to create it, to recreate it from scratch? In other words, to have their own system that does away with all that complexity. And that to me is like the kind of innovation on the level that a company like this would want to do.
I think what you have described is very close to a nationalized healthcare system. I think the government could do that really easily. Trying to force that change through the public market sounds incredibly, incredibly difficult. I do totally agree that if everything was well integrated, you would lose a lot of the problems that are currently creating kind of mass chaos in the healthcare system, skyrocketing costs, people who are uninsured, things like that. And the other idea, and this is something that people in the medical world are acutely aware of, if you go in and disrupt a healthcare system, what happens to the person who's sick and needs surgery today? You know, like if somebody can't get on their iPhone right now, they're not going to die. But their stakes are so much higher in the healthcare system, which I think just throws kind of a wrench into things because people are very conservative, like small c conservative about moving forward slowly and being gradual and being thoughtful about things, which you need to do to have a stable system that's going to take care of everyone. Now, would tearing everything down and creating their own system be more effective? Almost definitely.
One thing that's really interesting about Atul Gawande, the doctor who has been chosen as the new CEO of this new venture from JP Morgan and Berkshire and Amazon, is that he is a surgeon himself, as you pointed out in your profile of him after the news was announced. That is very unusual, actually, for health administrators. What kind of perspective does that give him? And how does that change how he might approach this giant problem that these three companies are now going to ask him to tackle?
Yeah, I think there's two things that it brings. One thing is that he has a really intricate understanding of how policies on a high level impact doctors and patients. So he might be able to see 10 steps down the line, oh, if we do X, then in 3 months, a doctor is going to have to deal with problem Y. So he might have a better understanding of the kind of unintended consequences of some things. I think he also has a really good understanding of the difficulties that doctors have right now that are leading to some problems. So, for example, he says, you know, as a specialist, you can't really see the end result of the outcome your patient has. Like their regular primary care doctor might see in 3 weeks' time, oh, their knee surgery hasn't gone well. But you might not know that. And so one of the things he brings up actually in a TED talk is the healthcare system, and especially people working in hospitals and clinics, have to become much more comfortable and intimate with data and use that to their advantage. Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I was speaking with a local kind of health tech person, and he, in his email to me, described them as the ABC Triumvirate, which I think is a great name. I might start using that.
Absolutely. So they have not picked the name yet, but they have picked their headquarters of this new venture. It's going to be in Boston. I was surprised by that, but as it turns out, that just shows how naive I am about the healthcare landscape. You said it actually made total sense.
It makes total sense. Boston is a huge hub for research and technology in healthcare. For example, you know, Dr. Gawande is based in Boston because Harvard is there, because they have really wonderful hospitals. I think it makes a lot of sense to have it there. And it also keeps it kind of neutral. None of the companies involved have their headquarters in Boston. So it's, if it was based in Seattle, say, it might seem to favor Amazon as one of the three partners. This, I think, is a little political as well as it just makes logical sense.
Well, I have to say this story fascinates me, not only because of the challenge that these three companies are taking on, but because of the companies themselves. I think anytime you have Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett, Jamie Dimon getting together, given the companies that they run and their reputations out there in the business world trying to solve this problem, you have to pay attention. So it's been fascinating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And if folks are interested in Dr. Gawande and his kind of thinking, he has written a few pieces for The New Yorker. I mentioned his books. So there's a lot of kind of info out there on him. Go read up on him if you're interested.
And if you're interested, in this broader topic of health technology or just trying to find out more about it, Claire produces and hosts a great podcast for GeekWire called Health Tech. You can find it at geekwire.com/healthtech. The season 2 is currently underway. You've got 2 episodes in the books and many more to come.
Yeah, it was actually funny listening to this TED talk because the last episode we did was exactly on the problem of doctors not being able to access data. So it was interesting to hear Dr. Gawande's thoughts on that as well.
All right. So from one giant problem, we're going to be jumping into another big problem coming up next on GeekWire. And that is, how do you move big items that you buy on Craigslist when you don't have a truck? That's coming up next. You're listening to The Week in Geek, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Week in Geek on GeekWire. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm Claire McGrain.
One of the big stories, perhaps the big story of the week, of course, was in immigration and the policy of separating parents and children at the U.S.-Mexico border, which was reversed this past week. But before that happened, there was a fascinating intersection with the tech industry, and in particular with government contracts held by Microsoft and Google and Amazon related to different elements of law enforcement, immigration, customs, and intelligence agencies, and the scrutiny that this new immigration practice brought on that this past week. Claire, what were your key takeaways on this story?
Well, there was a lot going on in the tech community itself and some of the politics of, you know, how people ethically feel about using technology in certain situations. The thing that really caught my eye from kind of my own personal point of view was really the role that social media plays and how we are aware of and engaging with politics and our societies and things going on. You know, this story was happening. This was happening for quite a long time, and it only really blew up, and the public outcry only came after pictures were shared on social media. Video was shared of the children who had been taken, separated from their parents, and put in detention centers. And that imagery was just so strong. And you see this with a lot of news stories, especially stories from places far around the globe. A photo can really change how people feel about it, you know, half a world away. So that was kind of my big technology takeaway that was just more on the personal side.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think the story really hit home for me when I saw those visuals, heard that audio. Actually, that was for me the most heart-wrenching thing. And what you're saying actually plays into my big takeaway about what this said about the tech industry, because with Microsoft in particular, one of the things that really held the company's feet to the fire and actually brought out what Microsoft has been doing with immigration and customs enforcement in the U.S. was a social media post pointing back to a press release or a blog post where Microsoft back earlier this year said that it was proud of the work that it was doing with ICE. And Microsoft actually was not in this story until that social media post took off, a post on Twitter. And it was really fascinating to see how this played out. And what struck me was the difference between how Amazon, Microsoft, and Google each reacted to controversies involving their involvement and their providing of technology to different government agencies. In Microsoft's case, they were very clear to point out that their technology and the technology that they're providing to ICE was not used in the actual separation of parents and children. They said they're basically providing basic technology to the immigration agency, things like mail and calendaring, and they were trying to make that clear in terms of the role that they were playing. But at the same time, they said they oppose the policy of separating parents and children. And Microsoft has been very clear and strong about actually suing and going after the government and taking a stand on immigration policies. But at the same time, they did not cancel their work with ICE. Google, on the other hand, after an uproar from their employees, actually said, okay, this work that they're doing on something called Project Maven, which was providing artificial intelligence and analysis of images taken from drones to the Department of Defense and the Pentagon, they said they're no longer going to work on that after their current work comes out. So they actually went in the way other direction. And then lastly, Amazon. Amazon is under criticism for supplying similar types of artificial intelligence technology to law enforcement. It's called Amazon Recognition. What struck me was Amazon basically said nothing.
Yep,
which
sounds right.
I thought was really indicative and telling about the corporate personalities of each of these three different tech companies.
Yeah. And I think all of their responses also bring up another theme that I think gets talked about quite a lot in the tech community. I don't know if we have a ton of time to dive into it here, but how do you make sure the technology you're creating is used responsibly? Do you have a responsibility to kind of vet the people who are using your products and making sure they're not being used in ways that you disagree with or that you think are morally incorrect? Like, how do you try and balance that with being a neutral party? There is so many interesting angles that to look at that from. And I think that's a conversation that's going to continue. Frankly, I know it's continuing in Microsoft that, you know, employees were pretty upset with Satya Nadella. So I think that'll be a kind of some soul searching to happen. And I'm curious to see where that goes.
That's right. Employees wrote an open letter to Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO, asking him to essentially cancel this contract. And he wrote his response talking about the fact that he was dismayed over what ICE was doing, but did not specifically address that call to cancel the contract. So an ongoing story, and the intersection with the tech community is fascinating. Another conflict between the government, in this case, state government, and the tech industry surfaced this past week. Our colleague Monica Nicholsberg had the scoop on this story. There is the company called Dolly, which is essentially like Uber for moving or moving large objects, in that what they provide is an app, a marketplace where you, as somebody who needs to move a large item, can connect with somebody who has a truck or a van or some other vehicle that can get that couch from the person you bought it from on Craigslist to your living room. Dolly is a Seattle startup. It operates here in Washington State, but also in some other markets around the country. A while back, it turns out, they were actually found by the Washington State Public Utilities and Transportation Commission to be a moving company, which comes with all sorts of regulatory requirements. And they were not living up to those regulatory requirements of being a moving company. They were saying, hey, we are a marketplace, an app marketplace, and we are a marketplace that connects people who are doing the moving. We're not movers ourselves. And so they actually got a shutdown order from the state saying you can no longer operate here. This past week, the news was that they sued the Public Utilities Commission over that and essentially are now trying to fight for their lives in Washington State to keep an operation here in their home state.
Yeah, and this is another issue that really gets at what responsibility tech companies have. In this case, responsibility to people like contractors, responsibility in their work. I'm thinking about responsibility a lot today, apparently. But I think this is so interesting because how this lawsuit gets decided could have a huge impact on the gig economy, the increasing number of people who are working as contractors through things like Rover or Uber, or who are renting out their home on Airbnb. Like, this could be a really kind of wide-reaching judgment that comes down.
That's right. And this is, as you said, something that really gets to the heart, that question. When somebody is providing a marketplace that connects buyers and sellers, are they in fact engaging in that business themselves or merely providing a service that brings these people together? So it has huge implications for the gig economy, whether legally this sets a precedent for the rest of those. All of these decisions collectively can have big implications for how society and the courts long term look at these kinds of situations.
And I think it could also go beyond just the court system into legislature. So if Dolly is following the law, does our state legislature, does Congress think that it's time to update those laws for this new reality of the vast number of marketplaces that do not employ people, but that people make their living through or make a lot of their living through? That's something that isn't really written into our laws, because until, 5-10 years ago, that wasn't a super common thing. So many interesting angles once again.
Absolutely. So for now, Dolly is continuing to operate in Washington State while this lawsuit is pending. But one of the things that the order asked them to do was basically remove their social media presence, which is very difficult to do within the confines of a state. They got that changed and are proceeding now, but the outcome of this suit will essentially determine their fate in the state. And since they're based here, it has huge implications.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the social media thing was so interesting. Like, social media does not follow state boundaries or national boundaries. Another instance of the law not quite being in step with the technology.
Absolutely. And I think that's one reason why that part of the order ended up being amended somewhat, but still a very interesting example of the law not quite being there, as you're saying. All right, coming up next on GeekWire, it's the Random Channel. You're listening to The Week in Geek. and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Claire McGrain, and it is time for the Random Channel, our virtual water cooler, where we talk about all the items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. Claire, a lot of the Random Channel was about the immigration decision this past week behind the scenes, so we just talked about that. Let's talk about something going on in your life. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about reading recently. So if you heard me on last week's Week in Geek, I talked about Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, so I've been doing some delving back into the Harry Potter books. But I've also been reading a fantasy trilogy by a linguist who's also a novelist called Suzette Hayden Elgin. And I've just been thinking a lot recently about reading and how much I value that as part of my life, especially science fiction, speculative fiction, fantasy, stuff that really kind of pulls at your imagination. And I find it, you know, I think about things differently when I'm reading a book, when I encounter them.
Do you read on paper books or Kindle?
Paper books. I can't really do Kindle.
Why not?
I've tried it. It just doesn't hold my attention for some reason. Like when I'm holding a paper book, I tend to get more kind of lost in it. And when I'm holding the Kindle, maybe it's just like the psychological effect of the screen, but I'm constantly like looking up and looking around and getting distracted.
Interesting. See, I love the Kindle Paperwhite. And the reason I love that is because you don't have to have the lights on in your bed if you're reading at night or, you know, and so that actually is cool because it does the front light where it points the light technically down at the screen. So
yeah, I have to say I have not tried the Paperwhite. I have tried the Kindle Fire. I still have a Kindle Fire that I take on vacation with me and use kind of as a tablet.
Would you do this experiment? Would you borrow my Kindle Paperwhite and see if you can make it work for you?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear like if that actually does it for you.
That would be really interesting. I would love to do that, Todd.
There you go. I'll bring it into the office next week.
I'll bring you a paper book.
Yeah. So now, yes, exactly. Okay, I missed that. I have a couple of those. I am at the point where I love to read longer form articles. And for many years, I've been using different read it later tools where if I'm in the middle of my day and I see a article that I want to read and I just don't have time to spend 10, 15 minutes reading it, I will hit that little button in my browser. Right now I'm using Pocket and that saves it for me and I can access it anywhere. I most recently have started using that in conjunction with an app called Voice Dream. I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but my use of this has just skyrocketed since I got my Apple AirPods. So the sort of the trio of those, Pocket, sending it to Voice Dream with my AirPods. Whenever I'm walking around, I just say, okay, I'm going to open up Voice Dream and have the computer read that story to me, which I know you are not a fan of at all, Claire.
Yeah, I think what you're doing is a really long workaround to listening to a podcast.
Yeah, well, basically the web is my podcast. That's the way I look at it. So that's my big thing. Our colleague Kurt Schlosser had a great piece speaking to all of these issues this past week after he went to his son's graduation from fifth grade, his sort of moving on ceremony from fifth grade, where the teachers, each of them, talked about the impact of technology on the kids as they observe it. And it was really a great read, and I recommend it to everybody. It's right along the lines of this. The ultimate message was, hey, put the phones down. No, really, put the phones down and experience the world around you. Experience the people around you. Make sure that you're still having genuine relationships. And in the case of these fifth graders, still being a kid while you can.
Yeah, I think I was reading this and going, if I was a fifth grader and I heard my teacher say this, I would be like, totally lame. But I think especially for really young kids, I mean, it really changes the way you think about the world if you constantly have a phone with you, especially at that young. So I think it was a really touching piece, and Kurt had a lot of good points that I took to heart. You know what it made me think of, actually? My boyfriend works with elementary schoolers. He works in an after-school program. And when the kids want him to print something out, they kind of print on-demand coloring instead of having coloring books. When they're trying to choose one, they'll like motion to him where they want to go by swiping, as if they were swiping on the screen, which is the opposite of how you would scroll with a mouse. And so for my boyfriend, it's really confusing because like these kids interact with screens in just a way that he doesn't. Like their brains think about it differently.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, the whole paradigm, the UI is impacting the rest of the world there, even though it's not the user interface in that case. Yeah, this was my favorite quote from Jenny Bill, who was 21 years as a teacher in this piece by Kurt Schlosser. She said, I ask you to put down your electronic devices and be a kid while you still can. Go outside and play, sit in a tree and daydream, bake some cookies, build forts, learn how to sew, take apart an old vacuum cleaner to see how it works, go to the library and read late into the night with their Kindle Paperwhite.
Or with a physical book. Come on, Todd.
My daughter is really into the Wimpy Kid book right now. So, yeah, the whole series, she's been sort of devouring it, which is cool for me to see. It was the first time that I had seen her literally in the back seat of the car on the way back from the library, just start diving in.
So my gosh, that was me as a child. There was never a moment I wasn't reading. But that's wonderful.
Can you read in the car without getting
car
sick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I struggle with that a little bit, depending on.
That's tough. Yeah.
All right. So that is our summer reading edition of the Random Channel on the Week in Geek. Anything else you want to talk about, Claire?
Go read a book, everyone, and listen to a podcast.
Absolutely. All right. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Claire McRae.
Thank you for listening to the GeekWire podcast. If you're not already, you should subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Just search GeekWire, that's all one word, in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you like what we do, consider leaving us a rating and a review. It really helps other people find the show. You can see more of our coverage at geekwire.com. The GeekWire podcast is produced by Claire McGrain. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next time.